Thought Leadership Studio.
You're listening to Thought Leadership Studio, the podcast that helps you master high-level positive mass influence to create distinctive business niches, captivate an audience, grow your following, and change the game by changing the frame with strategic thought leadership.
Thought Leadership Studio.
Welcome back to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm your host, Chris McNeil, and this is episode 85, Kim Willis on LinkedIn Mastery. From door-to-door sales to digital influence, Kim Willis on building authority, relationships, and business growth through content strategy. What this episode will do for you is explore Kim's journey from traditional to digital sales, how he transitioned from door-to-door sales to mastering affiliate marketing and LinkedIn strategies. Discover his powerful approach, the relax, disturb, relieve, and close framework to storytelling and sales, emphasizing customer needs and ethical influence. Overcome the myth of content-only success by understanding why relationships matter more than just posting content alone and how to nurture prospects effectively online. Help you learn how to build authority on LinkedIn, learning practical tips for optimizing your LinkedIn profile, creating meaningful content, and using engagement to build trust. And gain insights into Kim's strategy of nurturing long-term business relationships, cultivating prospects at the top of the funnel through authentic connection and ongoing engagement. But before we dive more deeply into this episode, in case you're new here, consider that I created the Thought Leadership Studio podcast to help listeners improve their thought leadership skills. So whether or not you consider yourself a thought leader at this point, consider that I've come to the conclusion that the practice of strategic thought leadership is now fundamental to effective marketing and helpful in any area of positive influence. It's about leading an audience to embrace a unique perspective that gives them more value. So this podcast is designed to provide an accelerated training process. And an important part of this is having models of excellence, for which I provide interviews of people who excel in one or more areas relevant to strategic thought leadership. And if you're listening on an app, make sure you visit the episode page on thoughtleadershipstudio.com. It's linked in the episode description for a summary of the episode with a curated transcript, a story and images, and additional resources and offers. In this episode, I'm excited to introduce Kim Willis, founder of Persuasion Pursuit and expert in direct response marketing. Kim's journey from door-to-door sales to online content strategy demonstrates that while technology changes, the fundamentals of human connection stay the same. With mastery on LinkedIn, he shares how authentic content and relationship building drive meaningful business growth. LinkedIn, of course, is a primary platform for strategic thought leadership, and Kim's wisdom and knowledge of the platform can help all of us who aim to positively influence and lead people to fresh perspectives in the business world using this social media channel. We explore his relax, disturb, relieve, close framework and discuss the myth of content-only success. Kim offers practical tips on nurturing prospects at the top of the funnel, engaging meaningfully through direct messages, and optimizing LinkedIn profiles to build trust and authority. This conversation is packed with actionable insights on turning strategic content into lasting business relationships. So without further ado, let's jump right into the interview.
Thought Leadership Studio.
Mm-hmm. So I'm your host, Chris McNeil with Thought Leadership Studio, and today I am thrilled to be speaking with Kim Willis, founder of Persuasion Pursuit and leading authority in direct response marketing. Over the years, Kim has helped countless entrepreneurs unlock their potential through high conversion copywriting and strategic list building, generating millions in revenue. He's also cracked the code on LinkedIn, turning it into a powerful platform for building relationships and driving sales. His unique blend of traditional sales psychology with modern digital strategies has made him a highly sought-after mentor. Welcome, Kim. It's great to have you here.
Hey, Chris. Thanks very much for the invitation. Looking forward to it.
Yes, and to the listener, we're acquainted. We've been in touch now for over a year, and I wanted to have Kim on the podcast for a while. Largely because he has, as I mentioned, cracked the code on LinkedIn. But Kim, you used to be a brick and mortar salesperson. Is that correct?
Yeah, we used to call it belly to belly. Originally I started as a door-to-door salesman. I think I was age 18. And I didn't do very well with that. But I learned a fantastic lesson. One was to do with asking questions and listening closely to the answer or the answers, and then interpreting those answers. So that was the first major skill. It's more than a sales skill. I think it's a communication skill. That was the first one. But the second one was regarding storytelling. And after failing, I did the in-house training with them. I was trained by the number one salesman in the world for this particular product. It was a book. It was called Modern Ways to Health, the two-volume product. I can't remember what it sold for. It was definitely less than 100 in the money of that time. But and then he said, okay, well, you go out on Monday morning and just knock on doors and then you check in on Friday. Okay. So that was it, just thrown to the wolves. And all right, so knock on a lot of doors and got a lot of no's. I got into a few houses. At least I was able to give a presentation each day that I went out. But by Friday, it was zero, nothing, except despondency and strong feelings that I want to quit. So anyway, I kept my word. I phoned in to the sales manager. And he said, okay, all right, I don't want you to quit, please. Let's just try it one more week. But this time, I'll come out with you next Monday morning. And he made the arrangements, and so I met him, and we started knocking on doors. Well, I started knocking on doors. He was just standing back and watching. And after about 15 minutes, I got into the first house, sat down, and, a little bit of chit-chat, and then I started doing the presentation again. And once again, I bombed. So out we go. And he said, don't worry, we'll knock on some more doors, see if we can get into another house and see what happens there. So, yeah, sure enough, after, I don't know, 20 minutes, half an hour, whatever it was, I got into another house and sat down, did the same presentation more or less, and once again, I bombed. So by this stage, I was kind of mortified because the number one seller in the world was watching me. So even the books originated from the US. I'm from Australia. So he was even beating the Americans at doing it. That's how good he was. And his name was Stan Rex. So I started walking. He said, oh, look, I think we might jump in the car and go and have a cup of coffee or orange juice or something like that. And we'll do a bit of a debrief because I don't want to put you through any more agony until we kind of sort this problem out. So when we sat down and he said, okay, I want you to just think about what you've been doing and then think back to the formal training that we gave you the week before. Was there anything there that you could see that you were not doing compared to what you learned at the in-house formal training? And after a minute or so, I thought, well, I probably didn't ask many questions or sometimes I didn't ask any. And he said, yeah, that's true. And why was that? Why were you hesitant about asking questions? Fear. I just the thought of, pushback from the prospect, the fear of silence, You know, what if they take a minute before they answer? I'm like this. So he said, yeah, that's perceptive of you. But there's one other thing that you didn't do that you were taught. What was it? He said, you didn't tell any stories. I said, oh, yeah. Must have been just nerves. When I was doing it by myself last week, I told a few stories, but I don't think I was that good at it. He said, well, whatever, whether you did them or you didn't do, whether you did them or you didn't do them, obviously something's not working there, because if you get the questioning right and you get the storytelling right, you just normally just sail through to an easy close. You've got, you know, no problems at all. So that was it. So I thanked him and then went back the next day and started knocking on doors again. I didn't make any sales that day. But I think 2 days later, I did make my first sale. And either later that day, I made another sale and then made several more sales after that. But 2 or 3 weeks later, I made the decision that I'm really not cut out for door-to-door. But I was happy that at least I made some sales. I got paid the commission and I learned two valuable skills. That was it. And from there, I went into the financial services industry selling life insurance. Oh, my God. That's like going from the frying pan into the fire at first. But I did very well in that industry. So 15 years in the industry. So that was great. So, yeah, that's how I got started. But, yeah, this storytelling and asking questions and listening closely to the answers and then interpreting the answers. And, yeah, that's those two skills, I think, are so valuable. And a lot of people don't really acquire them.
And you told a great story about telling stories, and you're clearly skilled at that. I noticed the components of the hero's journey in there, even of the mentor and the growth experience and getting out of your comfort zone and coming back with new skills to take to another environment. Yeah. What are the components of a story that truly engages an audience and leads them to where you want to take them?
Yeah, that's a great question. Normally I like to lead with pain. So we've got to be comfortable with that. And a lot of people in sales and marketing, especially if they're experts, you know, they come from more of a technical background, not so much a sales background. Could be accountants, could be, I don't know, bookkeepers, consultants, you know, CFOs, COOs, CTOs, fractional CTOs that worked in the company for a long time. They learned all of the processes and the methodologies, but they didn't have to find their own clients, but they decided to go out on their own. Maybe they got entrenched or something like that. Then it's moment of truth time, and they realize that there's a great skill set that they don't have. There's a significant skill set that they don't have. And that's why sometimes people reach out to me, because they recognize there's a gap there and they need some help to bridge the gap. But leading with pain is definitely a big part of it, I think. In fact, one of my teachers in the life insurance industry, who was an incredible teacher. I had two great teachers. The first one when I was age 22, and the next one came along 7 years later, age 29. And the second guy, he taught me the power of the disturbing people. This is once again in belly to belly, face to face situations. Mm-hmm. But so that the lessons that I learned from him, they drove deep into my psyche, if you like. And so I never forgot those lessons. They're so powerful. My income doubled, trebled, quadrupled within 90 days. Relax, disturb, relieve, close was the little formula he taught me. So you relax, let people, then you disturb them, and then, you know, give them some conceptual relief in the conceptual form, and then show them specifics of the solution if they want to, you know, if they're hot to trot for it. And then you can just do a simple close. There's no big hard sell or anything like that. If you get the front part right, that's what he always said. If you get the fear thing, the disturbing people, making them feel a bit uncomfortable, you don't need to be a hard closer. It'll just you know, it'll happen naturally. So when I finally made the transition to the online world, starting in 2006 as a high ticket affiliate marketer, I once again, I brought on board these skills. So my mentor taught me how to use Google AdWords to generate leads online. And then they'd go to a capture page and there'd be a phone field. And if they filled in the phone field, I'd call them. And once again, I just brought to the fore these skills of asking questions, finding out what the pain is, pressing the pain button a little bit in an ethical way, and and telling stories. So that was it. And I started making sales in this online affiliate marketing kind of thing, although making phone calls is obviously an offline traditional activity. But eventually it became a Skype thing where I was using Skype and when I was traveling, doing a lot of overseas traveling, all of that. But still, once again, these same skill sets that I acquired previous years, people, previous experiences with great teachers, served me very well. And then when I made the next transition in the online world to content, social media in particular, starting with Facebook in 2016, and then more recently, LinkedIn in 2021. So that's not that long ago. I knew by then that content was the deal. And there's no more face-to-face, belly-to-belly stuff here. We're talking about content to kind of woo people, to demonstrate competence and build some authority, hopefully. So it became obvious to me that it's imperative to win the content game. It's absolutely imperative. Otherwise, you're just going to, you're just not going to make progress. You're going to be frustrated. Then you'll start blaming the platform. You mentioned LinkedIn, but it could be Facebook, it could be something else, but we start blaming the platform. It's amazing, you know, when I started with sort of transitioning across, it was just after COVID ceased to be a major problem, I started transitioning to LinkedIn, and I did make some connections with some interesting people and good people, and there were some people there that I thought were hot influencers, getting hundreds of comments every time they post and all of this. It really shocked me 3 or 4 months later when two of them, people that I'd had just nice conversations with in the DMs, two of them quit. And they quit posting every day. And I thought, what's happening here? So I still had a LinkedIn account, but I reached out to one of them. I said, I haven't seen you posting recently. And they said, I've gone back to a day job. These were the big influencers. They weren't getting any business. They weren't making any money. Mm-hmm. And that was one of them. And the other one actually came clean in a post. And he said, look, I'm having to take up a job. I really hate that. My dream has been shattered. You know, create independence, digital nomad thing, working from home, whatever. At least he was, you know, straight up front about it. But alluded to the myth of the content only method. The first 12 months, I didn't get any inbound leads from my content. And I would rate my content as above average, well above average compared to most of the content that we see in our newsfeed. Mm-hmm. I do write content that speaks to pain or speaks to problems, et cetera, and then gives people an idea as to how to maybe solve that little problem, et cetera. And I was starting to get some comments, which was nice, a little bit of social proof coming through there. A lot of posts don't get much engagement at all, visible public engagement. And I think a lot of it is to do with their content. It's just not good enough. So it doesn't speak to people on their terms, you know. It doesn't resonate with them. So they just keep scrolling. They're looking for something else that'll grab them, you know.
Right.
So, the content thing is vitally important. I think everybody needs to if you want to make one of these social platforms work for you, you've really got to sort out the content issue there. With LinkedIn, there's a bit more that you have to do as well. So that's the newsfeed. But then we've got the profile. It's different to Facebook. Facebook doesn't give you much space I'm talking about your personal profile on Facebook. It doesn't give you, they don't give you much space to tell a story, whereas LinkedIn does. So on the personal profile page on LinkedIn, you've got your banner, you've got your header image up the top, and you can overlay some key words there. Got to get those words right. Then you've got the headline underneath the image. You've got a few couple of other opportunities just below that, depending on the status of your account. And then we get to the About section. And the About section gives you plenty of room to tell a good story. The question is, will it be a good story? Are you just going to talk about yourself all the time, or are you going to talk about them? And that's, I think, a lot. I did a call earlier with a lady, and she's in Australia. And before I went onto the call, I had a look at her About section. She needed help. And I looked at her About section. It was just about her, you know, meme. It was like a resume, just a glorified resume. It doesn't work. Not now. It doesn't work. So we've got to call out the pain. We've got to, lead with some kind of a problem that your ideal client is experiencing. Maybe then walk them through a process as to how you might solve that problem, conceptually speaking. There's different ways we can structure the About section. But if we get our personal profile working properly, that gives us a good opportunity to get some action happening. But then we marry that with appropriate content, then that's the twin. They're the twin wins that you're looking for. So if you can get your personal profile looking good, you get your news feed looking good, plenty, and you're starting to get some comments and some engagement, then when a prospective client checks you out, yeah, you're in a much better position.
Absolutely.
So, that's...
Well, you covered a lot of ground already, Kim. Thank you. I want to give our listener a little bit of context, and correct me anywhere I'm off, but you're from Australia, but you're living in Cambodia, which is not the best environment for face-to-face business. So you've really moved all your business online at this point.
Yep.
And that's different for some of us. I work with clients online and also have local clients. I'm in Charleston, South Carolina, which is, medium-sized city with healthy business environment. But you don't have that benefit. So you've had to crack the code. And to pick a thread, I think would be interesting to dive into maybe a little more. You understand that with all the tech tools that we have around us, which can be hypnotizing, it still comes down to human psychology. Human nature is human nature is human nature. People respond to stories. They still respond to the same methods of persuasion that they would face to face. But the difference is now the typical sales process that we used to go through of, generate a lead somehow, then follow up with a series of phone calls, meetings, or letters is largely been replaced by a self-serve process where people are consuming content. And your content has to do a lot of that work for you and for them. And it shouldn't be self-serving, but should be about the person you're writing to and their problems and what we can do about them.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of the content that I see in my newsfeed is what I call love us content. So look at me, look at my boards, look at what's, it's all about them. Oh, look, I'm at this networking event. Yes, so what? It's that might impress people who are at the bottom of the sales funnel where they're actively looking for solutions. Now they're looking for a provider. But most of the people on LinkedIn are not actively looking for a solution. A lot of them do have a problem. But they're kind of vaguely aware of a problem. Maybe they are experiencing some pain, depending on what your niche is and who you're targeting. But they're not actively looking for a solution because they don't know what to look for. They're not yet at that point. So we're much better off if we're creating content that caters to the people at the top of the funnel. These are the pain-aware people and the problem-aware people. Those two groups, they're the most important ones. That's the bigger part of the market. And the people who are actively looking for a solution, well, possibly it's just too late for you if you haven't already got a relationship with them. It's too late because they'll have relationships with other people. And so you're better off cultivating people a little bit earlier in the process. And you do it with this type of content. And you build a follow-up. Like a classic example, it's nighttime, my time, as you know, Chris. But this morning, when I woke up, check my emails and LinkedIn, and there's a message from a lady who's in New York City, in New Jersey. And she's a lady that I've been connected with for about 2 years. She was going to hire me about like a year ago, but she had a health crisis. So we put everything on hold. And she was like out of action for many months, but she came back, and I didn't start hustling or anything like that, but I just said, welcome back. You know, good to see that things have worked out for you. I didn't even talk about business. She's a really nice lady. I like her. And, you know, so I just left it at that. Comment on her content once a week minimum. And anyway, all of a sudden this morning, she reaches out and she leaves a voicemail saying, look, I keep looking at your content. See, the content is important. It doesn't always generate an inbound lead, but it kind of reinforces. I already had a relationship with her, but my content kept reminding her of key issues. And she said, I'm just wondering if we could do another call. We haven't done one since before I got sick. And then I've had a further discussion with her. So she wants to do business. We've just got to work something out that'll work for both of us. So I'm talking to her tomorrow. So yeah, it's marvelous when you get it to that point where the content is doing its bit, your personal profile is doing its bit. And then if you're engaging with people a little bit in the DMs, I'm not talking about doing salesy things like that. We don't need to. We do it right. Build a relationship, expose people to the content. If you've got a good piece of content that's had some good support from your followers and you think it might be relevant for that particular prospect, okay. It's okay to just send them a message and say, hey, Mary, I thought this might be relevant to you based on our previous discussion. And if you like my post, it'd be great if you could leave a comment. That's it. And then sooner or later, it starts to, you know, starts to work. So the wheels start to turn, and then someone like the lady this morning reached out to me, and then, you know, away we go again. So another little adventure begins.
Absolutely.
Did I answer the question?
Well, yeah, I'm getting a couple things from this. It's almost like the three legs of a stool. It won't stand up without all three. If one's missing, the profile, the content that actually is oriented around the reader and solving their problems, and the direct connection through DMs seem to be like the trifold strategy. And we've had discussions.
Like the trifecta.
Yeah. And we've had discussions outside of this too, that I was really impressed by how you use the soft touch with direct messaging and realize that it has to be, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's by recollect, it has to be purely about relationship building without any hint of sale initially. And I think a lot of people miss that. You think everything has to be self-serving, maybe out of fear that if I don't ask for a sale now, this person will go away and not buy anything from me. But what they're really doing is they're not building the relationship that eventually could lead to a sale because it's a little off-putting.
Yeah, that's right. Well, one of the things that I do on LinkedIn periodically, maybe every 2 months, something like that, I run a live show on LinkedIn. And this lady that I was referring to this morning, is who I'm doing a call with tomorrow. She has registered for two out of the last three live events. See, so she's leaning forward. I'm always looking for the signs, the signals, leaning forward. Even if they're not commenting on my post, maybe they'll leave a like. Ah, right. Okay, there's something about that post that she or he liked. And then they registered for my live event. Very good. It's another sign, a positive sign. Sometimes I'll get a VA to just send some messages to a list that I've got Just letting them know about the live event that's coming up with the topic and a little bit of background information about the live event. That works, surprisingly well, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And when I see the same people over and over again registering for the event, it's good news. That's good news. So I think, people, especially people come from a traditional sales background, they struggle with social media because they're wearing their hunter hat.
Uh-huh. You know?
Well, you really need to wear the farmer hat, more farmer than hunter. There may be a time to hustle a little bit towards the end of the process, but during the early phase there, the early stage, it's much more about hunting. You're spreading the seeds, watering the soil, and a few shoots start to spring up.
Absolutely. You know,
sprout. And I think that's a pretty good analogy, and it's very accurate for social media because trust is the hardest thing to establish, especially with social media. People underestimate how hard it is, actually, because if in the offline world, I mean, I have not had an appointment face-to-face in the offline world for 10 years. And I told someone that a couple of weeks ago. He said, what? You've done nothing? Nothing locally? No, nothing locally. Nothing at all. I can't do business here. I'm moving to Vietnam in a couple of weeks to reunite with my sons. I'm going to live there. But the same thing. The locals, most of the locals don't speak English or don't speak much English. But fortunately, there's a big expat community, a lot of Western kind of business people there, Americans, Canadians, Australians, British, French, because it used to be a French colony. So there's a lot of scope there, I think. But, a lot of people struggle with the online because they don't realise. That's what I was going to say. If we meet somebody at an offline event, or we do a face-to-face coffee meeting with somebody at a local coffee shop or something like that, you haven't met them, but maybe someone gave you their name and you call them up and then say, why don't we meet for a cup of coffee? Right, let's do that. Well, as long as you hit it off well, you get some rapport happening quickly, within 10 minutes, there's a degree of trust established within 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And people are feeling good about it. You know, there's rapport, good banter and stuff like that. And you're thinking, oh, I really like this guy, you know? It doesn't happen in the online world, 10 minutes? No way. No, it can take weeks, months. That's the downside. The upside is that we can throw off the geographically limiting shackles. We can do business anywhere.
That's right. It's freeing in a way, but I love the analogy, the farmer versus the hunter. In my world, we do a lot with creating central thought leadership pieces around the thought leadership model or position. Yes. that really is designed to be empowering to an audience of prospective buyers. Yeah. And it's not always easy to get the client to buy in that any hint of self-serving sales type language in this kind of piece is going to create an enormous amount of friction to using it as a platform to stand on, which it could otherwise be, especially if it gets any viral quality and gets lots of downloads or reads or whatever format it's through. And then could be a platform to stand on to guest on podcasts like this one, et cetera. But if it's a self-serving brochure-y sales type piece, it's way too much friction to attract people, as you mentioned, at the top of the funnel. But if we're not creating this type of top of the funnel content, then we're letting our competitors educate people about the criteria of what to choose, and that's probably not going to be ours. So it's just...
Yeah, absolutely. That's right. I think the key words there were self-serving. And if people have the perception that what you're doing is self-serving, if you're doing it too early in the process, there's a time and a place for everything. There's a time and a place to talk about how we might be able to solve, how I might be able to, or how you might be able to solve someone's problem. But if we get the timing wrong, it'll backfire and maybe they'll never talk to us again. So that's why I think farmer, not hunter, is the way to go, especially with in the online world. Build the trust, get people. Some people start commenting on your post. All right, so I might reach out and I say, I really love that comment that you gave today, John. That you really nailed it with that point, blah, 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 whatever the point was. And they say, oh, thank you very much. Just building a relationship. And then, sooner or later, if they are an ideal prospect for us, sooner or later, we're going to need to just push it along a little bit. And so that's when I might send out a message that's a little bit more. It's still very them focused, and it's relatively gentle. But it might talk about it might be a mini case study. Someone I've recently, for instance, I've got a guy where I've helped him with his content in the first instance, and now we're helping him with a whole lot of other things. But that was when that started to happen. When his content started to improve dramatically and he went from like one or two comments per post to 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, sometimes 100 comments a post. And this guy, he's not a mass marketer. He's very niche. His topic is very niche. So for him to be going, I noticed his latest post that he published, was it Tuesday? I think it was Tuesday. It's already nudging 75, 80 comments. Public display. That's a public display. And so when he saw this happening, then he was 100% sold on me. So when I suggested the next stage, something else that he might look at that we can, you know, bring this baby home, so to speak, he said, yeah. If it works as well as what you've done with the content and the help you've given me there, I'm all in. So, it's so important that we get these basic elements right, I think, and then we start winning the game on LinkedIn.
Army.
Winning the game. Not, we don't want to be another casualty, another failure. Absolutely. Someone else who goes back to their day job.
Absolutely. Well, farming, you know, keep the soil healthy, keep the nutrients there, and plant the seeds and then water the seeds, let the sun do his thing. Although there is that line by Gallagher that farmers are actually raping the earth by bleeding the nutrients out of the soil, but real estate developers seal the nutrients in with concrete for the use of future generations.
Oh, right.
Bad
I like
joke.
It.
Bad joke, but in any case, I think...
I get it.
For our listeners, and we usually wind these interviews up in a couple of ways, what would be... two kinds of questions. The first, what would be three things that you'd recommend our listener do right away to improve their content, improve their online sales and activity? And second, someone's listening to this thinking, yeah, I'd like to connect with Ken and learn more about what he does. Maybe he can help me. How would he reach you?
Okay. All right. Well, the first thing they can do to improve their content, I think probably the first thing to do is to become a little bit of a student of content. If they can do that, if they can make that, there's problems with this sometimes because some people have sold themselves a story that they can't write. For instance, they can't write. Some of them say to themselves, "I can't tell stories. I can't write stories." But if they can overcome those self-imposed mental roadblocks, what they should do is have a look at what other creators are doing, but certainly have a look at what I'm doing. They can have a look at others as well. And maybe they'll learn something from that. They'll glean a few ideas from that. Look at the way they structured the paragraphs, structure the sentences. They make them, the best creators that often simplify everything. And so me, I'm always stripping words. I might write the first draft, and that might take me, I don't know, 15 minutes or 20 minutes or something like that. But then I'll go back to it after a few hours, and then I'll see all sorts of areas that I can tweak it, right? So I look for any superfluous word that doesn't add to and perhaps even subtracts from the quality of the piece. I just strip them out, get rid of them. So that then will help the readability. So it'll mean that it may not be a hugely impactful piece of content because you're struggling, you know, they're struggling in the dark. They really don't know what they're supposed to be doing. But if they can just do some basic things like that, write something, you know, and then go back after a couple of hours and see if you can find superfluous words, strip them out. Does it make a difference? Does it make it more readable for the follower, for the person that's looking at the content? So that'd be one simple way to start. In terms of reaching out to me, well, they can LinkedIn is probably a pretty good place to start. And I'm happy to put aside 15, 20 minutes and find out, you know, what it is that you're trying to achieve, maybe give you some ideas, some tips, and just see what happens from there. But that's basically how people normally start. They send me a connection request. then if they want a bit of free help, I can give it to them. If they want more professional help, we can talk about that as well.
Excellent. That sounds great. And to the listener, I'm going to link to persuasionpursuit.com and also Kim's LinkedIn profile on the episode page on thoughtleadershipstudio.com. So if you're listening on an app, the link to that page is in the episode description. As always, it's been a pleasure, Kim.
Fabulous. Thanks, Chris. Once again, I really appreciate you bringing me onto your wonderful podcast. You've had some fantastic guests and more to come in the future, I'm sure.
My pleasure.
Thought Leadership Studio.
Thanks again for listening to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm your host, Chris McNeil, and this has been episode 85, Kim Willis on LinkedIn Mastery, from door-to-door sales to digital influence, building authority relationships in business growth through content strategy, where we discuss topics like unlocking sales potential with storytelling and questioning, the psychology of storytelling, crafting narratives that lead to sales, the myth of content-only success, and the shift from selling to serving, nurturing leads with thoughtful content. If you are listening on an app, make sure you go to the episode page on thoughtleadershipstudio.com. It's linked to in the episode description, where you can get links to Kim's resources like his website and his LinkedIn page, a curated transcription of this interview. The resources we mentioned, along with other free resources like the Marketer's Guide to Strategic Thought Leadership, a guide to organizing the building blocks of your own thought leadership, and you can also get a link to get a free preview of my upcoming book, Strategic Thought Leadership. Thanks again for listening. I'm Chris McNeil, Strategic Thought Leadership Coach and Consultant. This is Thought Leadership Studio, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode.
Thought Leadership Studio. Mm-hmm.